You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 30th of April. We're still playing, and most people aren't. We'll look back on the incredible night of Friday, as well as the blowout loss on Sunday, where the franchise stands in relevance to everybody else, and looking ahead through the series. Lots of stuff coming up on a Monday edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look behind the curtains of the Jazz season. Thanks very much for tuning in. We're still playing, boys and girls. How awesome is that? Think about this for a second. There are three teams in the Western Conference that have returned to the semifinals. They are Houston, Golden State, and Utah. That's where we have planted our flag in the Western Conference. Incredible work by Quinn Snyder and Dennis Lindsay and the players, because our team is dramatically different than Golden State's pretty much the same. Houston added Chris Paul, so they only got better. And yet, we were the team who was supposed to go the other direction. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Over in the East, Boston, Toronto, and Cleveland are all back. Okay, so there's six teams in the NBA that are working at a consistency level beyond the rest of the league. And we're one of the six. That is an incredible tribute to the Millers, to the coaching staff, to the front office, to Rudy Gobert, and what has been built. I don't, the big question is, what does that mean long term? I think it's interesting. I mean, we got a story to tell, right? We have a really, really interesting story to tell. Does that overcome to free agents some of the things that, otherwise might not be as good? I don't know. But it's an interesting time for the franchise to still be playing and to be now at a point where, really you are different than most of the other franchises. Still playing at this point is a big deal. I really felt it yesterday as we walked into the arena on Sunday, a little blurry and kind of exhausted and overwhelmed by the turnaround, and yet at the same time really just incredibly honored and flattered to work for an organization and be a part of this at this level of basketball. It's going to be May and we're going to be playing, and there's only eight teams doing it, and there's only six teams that have done it in each of the last 2 years, and we're one of them. That's pretty awesome. Let's go back to Friday, since we did a postcast for you. I had a technical problem with last night's postcast that I will try to get fixed and still get it up at some point. I thought Ron was good last night after the game. So here's the breakdown of today's show. Well, segment one, we'll do some of Friday, and then segment two and three, we'll do Sunday and look ahead, since we haven't talked. Friday was incredible. To win that series, I do think from a big picture standpoint, something we've been talking about this show all year long is, hey, if the Utah Jazz are beating the Oklahoma City Thunder with Russell and Paul George and, Carmelo is a big name, but with all that star power and everything they're supposed to be, then we probably should be rethinking about how we look at the NBA. The fact that the Jazz lost their best player for a good portion of the season, had the same record as the Thunder, and then beat them pretty handily during the playoffs, leads me to think that it's time to recalibrate how we think about things. This is very much the same conversation we've had all year long about the value of Rudy Gobert, the value of defense, the value of smarts. Think about this from a math standpoint, okay? And we're playing the ultimate money ball team right now, but using some data from Second Spectrum, If the average player in the NBA had taken the Jazz shots in the first round, the effective field goal percentage would have been 54.5. And for the Thunder, it would have been 49.7. So just based on shot quality, has a little bit to do with how well you're guarded, how open you are, and where you're taking your shots. How does this matter? Over the course of an 80-shot game, which is what most are, the Jazz would score nearly 8 points more per game than the Thunder just based on average players because the offensive system and the smarts of the team took better shots. 8 points a game. Do you realize how hard it is to make up 8 points in the course of a game? And here's what's crazy. In that series, the Thunder are the team that shot beyond their regular number. The Thunder actually shot closer to their regular number than the Jazz did. The Jazz didn't shoot well in that series. The Jazz were below average. And yet their shot distribution was so dramatically better that they still shot a higher percentage. That's the brilliance of an organization playing the game right, playing the game in a team fashion, and then playing great defense. And we want to talk about the individual star players. Now, we don't win that series without a superstar performance by Donovan Mitchell. Holy smokes, was that incredible. I mean, that was truly one of the great performances, maybe in franchise history. I was talking to Matt Bullard of the Rockets, who maybe I'll get on this week and have on the show, broadcast, former champion. He was talking about how Harden, in the 50-point quarter for the Rockets, scored 22 points, which is the most ever by a Rocket player in the playoffs. Okay, the Rockets have had Elvin Hayes and Hakeem Olajuwon and a lot of really great players. Moses Malone. Donovan Mitchell scored 22 points in the third quarter of that game, which is the most points by any Jazz player ever in franchise history. Jazz have had Adrian Dantley and Karl Malone, some really great players who could get really, really hot. And that's the most points ever scored by a Jazz player in a quarter. He hit 10 straight shots. It was dominatingly awesome. He's really special. And then add in that Russell Westbrook came back at him one-on-one. And Westbrook was trying to take it to him, trying to say, all right, kid, all right, beep-de-beep, let's go, you little beep. Let's see what you got. And he answered the bell and went toe-to-toe and then outplayed Westbrook. Truly incredible. Truly, truly incredible. The other one that jumped out to me that night that really I thought was poignant, and I don't know how TV captured some of it, Utah Jazz social networks have done a nice job catching the embraces, the exchanges from amongst the players. I mean, really incredible moments of high-level passion, love, camaraderie, care for each other. Probably should talk about it more this week, and I might dig into it a little bit. But the Millers, with the guidance of the front office and Quinn Snyder, built this incredible, incredible practice facility with the purpose of creating an environment where the players wanted to hang out. And you wonder whether that's part of what has built this camaraderie. Unique players, certainly, they have to get along, but they truly do, and they've spent that time together. Friday night was just incredible. I ran the concourse, running up and down, screaming and yelling, going nuts, throwing Detlef Schrempf jerseys on. In my career, 25 years in the league, Stockton shot here in Houston. winning a WNBA championship with Ann Donovan, Sue Bird, Lauren Jackson, and that game. And that game. Those are the three biggest moments that I've ever called. We didn't want to go back to Oklahoma City, and I think we're in a lot of trouble. Game 7 last year in the Clippers against the Clippers last year is a notch behind that for some reason. Calling a game 7 was truly awesome last year. That was one of the great thrills of my life, waking up that morning, so much energy, so much juice. But I felt that the whole way on Friday, too, and there was more to it, right? You know, I worked for the Sonics. That ownership group made my life great by firing me, but they still fired me. You know, my life's a million times better. My kid's life is a million times better. Everything's gone the correct direction. Thank you to the Miller family for that. But that was one of the most incredible moments I've been a part of. And I don't want to – I really would love to just do today's show on Friday, scheme, dig into all the X's and O's, the rewatch, the various things that took place, the great plays, the little plays that took place, and not talk about Sunday at all. And just – we have 2 days. We could have done that. We could have done Monday's show today on that and then move past that. Would have been kind of cool. I should have done that. And then we just lived in an alternate universe where we didn't talk about Houston yet, but we'll do it the other way. It was really – Joe Ingles was great. Without Ricky Rubio, Joe took the point, showed all of his value. You know, early in the series, Oklahoma City decided they wanted to take away – or they put Paul George on Joe Ingles and took him away. And then when they changed and tried to take Donovan away, they freed up Joe Ingles, and he's pretty vital to who the Jazz are. I'm still not sure that I don't think the right move – wasn't taking away Joe Ingles, because frankly, trying to take away Donovan just didn't work. And so then you freed them both. That final minute of the game was beyond nuts with 4 straight offensive rebounds. I certainly at the time live thought Rudy Gobert had fouled Paul George. I'm still a little stunned they didn't call it. I can understand why they say they didn't. And I do think that Paul George's terrible late game history in the final 24 seconds from 3 played into that. He wanted the bailout. He wanted the bailout. And boy, did he ever tank game 6. Wow. All right, we'll look ahead now. Do we have to? Can we just go live in an alternate universe and go back and keep talking about that? We probably should. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Tyson was there Friday night firing it up with me, high-fiving the crew, going nuts, loving every second of it. Way to go, Tyson. Tyson Murdoch is running Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy has been in Utah for 91 years. Part of the bread and butter culture of Utah is the Murdoch car dealerships, and obviously Chevy is so Utah, everything about Chevy. And Chevy's on fire right now. They've done incredible things. They have the best lineup of trucks, from the heavy-duty Silverado, the light-duty half-ton Silverado, the mid-size truck Colorado, the Colorado Diesel. They're the only truck line that has all of the truck segments for you right now. They have Allison Transmission. So if you're in the market for a truck, boom, Chevy is the spot. Murdoch Chevy is the spot. You get the Murdoch guarantee with the 5-day price guarantee, match guarantee, or the price match guarantee, the 5-day return policy, oil changes, and car washes for life. Plus, the SUV lineup is fantastic. The Suburban, the Tahoe, the Equinox, the Traverse now has 3 rows of seating, and also the Trax. Go check it out at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Tyson is there. I'd love to talk some jazz with you while you're there as well. 91 years, the Murdoch family and Chevy tied in together. Today's show also brought to you by Intercap Lending. Intercap Lending is a 40-year mortgage company that has moved to Utah. They actually are the ones who did our mortgage for us in a refinance in the middle of the season, which they really deserve a medal for that, like the fact that Steve Carter was willing to deal with me and my just, I'm so busy. I have this really hard job. I call NBA play-by-play games. I'm traveling too much. And somehow he got me through the process. You can give Steve a call at 385-885-28. Here's why I feel comfortable telling you to use Intercap Lending. One, they made the process as simple and easy as possible. Steve said we're going to try to make it like ordering a pizza online. It was pretty darn close. The app is fantastic. Download the Intercap Lending app, and you can actually, in this insane market, get pre-qualified based on information through the app. And then throughout the refinance process or the financing process. They just take you step by step. You know exactly where you are. They're continually updating you through the app. There's no mystery of what's taking place, and it's streamlined into mass efficiency. The second reason is because InterCap Lending is a direct issuer, so they service their own loans. They have long-term relationship. That allows you, if you are somebody who is self-employed, has business assets, multiple properties, anything that makes your loan at all unique that the kind of static big banks aren't going to be able to kind of look at and put through their realize and just put through their formula, they can help you out a great deal. So give InterCap Lending a call, 385-800-8528. That's Steve Carter's line, 385-800-8528. InterCap Lending, NMLS 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. All right, let's talk about yesterday. And then we'll do big picture on the series. The Jazz were dead tired. I mean, I'd love to pretend that there's something else going on here, but the Jazz were dead tired. Within 12 hours of leaving the arena, we were on an airplane to Houston. So the truth is the Jazz lost game one to Houston, which they might have lost anyway, because Houston's great. But they lost game one by losing the 25-point lead. The 25-point lead in Oklahoma City lost. It didn't cost the Jazz the series against Oklahoma, but it cost them game one against Houston. And now you've got to try to beat a team that won nearly 60 games or did win. I don't remember. They just won a whole heck of a lot of games. You've got to try to beat them 4 out of 6, which is, you know, an incredible task, but who knows? They won 65 games. They didn't win like 60 games. They won 65 games. So they've lost 17 times all year long, and now we got to find a way to beat them 4 out of the next 6. It's a huge task. Here's literally what the Jazz did to try to get ready for yesterday's game. They met back at the arena or at the practice facility at around noon. Just as Quinn said, let's just start at least talking about Houston so that when we get on the plane to go to Houston, we're thinking about Houston, not still talking about Oklahoma City. Makes some sense. But, I mean, I didn't go to bed till 3. I didn't even play, but I was so geeked, it was unbelievable. And the, Joe and Donovan and Ricky were sending notes back to each other. Plus, you've lost Ricky. So there's a lot of evolution that has to take place here. Donovan, I know a lot of people want to say Donovan's a point guard. You can see Donovan really struggle when he has to think about how to play the point. So then we get to Houston, and they actually did something really interesting. The bigs met to talk about Houston's smalls, and the smalls met to talk about Houston's bigs. In other words, in the course of this series, you are going to have to match up against guys that aren't your natural position, and you're going to have to know all 5 guys' personnel. So Dante Exum is going to have to know what guarding P.J. Tucker means or guarding Trevor Ariza, because in transition, you're just going to have to pick guys up. Then they called it a night, got up. We played early, though. We played at 2:30. Our bus was at 12, so they met at like 10:30 and went through a walkthrough. No court time at all to play a team that is dramatically different. The biggest difference, there's 2 things that are different about the Thunder that irks about the Rockets that jumped out. One is, in transition defense, the Jazz against Oklahoma City ran back into the middle of the paint and built a wall to stop Russell Westbrook and did an incredible job of it throughout the series. The Rockets, you have to sprint back, not even looking at the ball, and then whatever guy is closest to you, you mark to. And then someone's got to literally just say, I got James Harden. And it doesn't matter who you are. If you're Derek Favors, Dante Exum, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, you just grab whoever you got. The problem is that for 6 straight games, you've been busting your ass running all the way back to get into the middle of the paint to build a wall to keep Russell Westbrook at 15 feet. And now you got to defend at 25 feet. Incredibly different. And you saw in the game the other night when the guys got it all tired, that they ran back and built fabulous walls to stop Russell Westbrook. The problem was Russell Westbrook was fishing. And so that there just was the transition was just too much. Way too much. Offensively, the Jazz got caught by the switching because even though they dealt with switching into Oklahoma City, which I think will be helpful as this series goes on, the Rockets, if you watch them closely, switch very differently. The Rockets, when they switch, so two guys come together, whether it's a handoff, off ball, or on ball, or whatever it is, the Rockets will immediately switch it. But the unique thing that they do is that when the new defender, so let's say Jazz run a Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert pick and roll, Clint Capella's guarding Rudy Gobert, Clint Capella steps forward almost above the screen to pick up Joe Ingles. Most teams, if they switch that, they just slide horizontally. You can start coming downhill a little bit at them, and you're able to kind of get the momentum. The Rockets are taking the initiative and stepping toward the ball. The other thing they're doing is off the ball, they contact switch. So they literally are touching you when they're switching you, which means you have a lot of teams will do, again, a soft switch, but they're contact touching. And so, therefore, you're not, like, open in those moments in which the switch is taking place. It's why the Rockets' defense this year was ranked 6th in the NBA. You know, the Thunder's defense was ranked 9th in the NBA and 15th after Robertson got hurt. The Rockets are 6th in the NBA. So the Jazz, this is a much, much better defensive team that the Jazz are now playing in the Rockets than the Thunder. This is just a much, much better basketball team. This is what happens. I mean, this is a very similar, frankly, to last year, the difference between playing the Clippers in that first round and the Warriors in the second round. These guys are great. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But those are the two things that jumped out. I'm actually, the concern I have, twofold. One is that I'm not sure that the Jazz played with enough focus and attention and detail in game one that they really learned very much. Like, I don't know necessarily that when Quinn Snyder's looking at the film, he's getting a lot from it. We got really blown out. We're down 25 at halftime. I mean, that's, I always love when I listen to commentators who say, like, well, there's keeping in, 25 is not the case. They're keeping in contact, like they're down 12. And I'm always thinking to myself, okay, they're staying in contact, but the equivalent of being down 12 is being down 24 for a game, which is a really big ass kicking. The equivalent of being down 25 at the half is being down 50. I mean, we got run yesterday. That's fine. But we did. I mean, let's be honest about what it was. And they're great. So I don't know whether or not the closing moments are really anything that gives. The second part of that is, so one is I'm not sure that we did enough early to give Quinn something really to watch. And the second thing that I think is I almost would have rather lost by 30 and had the Rockets get to sit around and hear how great they are for 2 days and see if we can get them coming out flat. Today's show is brought to you by my friends whose name I wish they would change. I'm convinced that Mike over at Rad Concrete Coatings was given a bet to spend money by advertising on Locked On Jazz to see how many times I could screw up saying Rad Concrete Coatings. Now, I've slowed down, which I never do, so that I can say Rad Concrete Coatings 5 times fast. Rad Concrete Coatings, Rad Concrete Coatings, Rad Concrete Coatings. These are good guys. Mike started the company 17 years ago, coming out, I think, University of Utah. His first employee hired is still with him. I asked Mike, what do you pride yourself most about when it comes to Rad Concrete Coatings? He said two things. One, we have the latest, greatest stuff. We go to every world of concrete. We know everything that's out there. We have the best selection. We're going to get you the best stuff. And he was honest to me. He says, you know, we're not the cheapest. We're just the best. We have the best selection, the widest ranging possibilities for you. It's why you see them in the Parade of Homes every year. There'll be an 8 homes in the Utah County Parade of Homes coming up. And the other thing he said is we have great applicators. So really, when it gets down to it, they can buy the best stuff. They can have the best supplies for you. But if the guys that are applying the concrete aren't super at what they're doing, it doesn't really work. So waterproof deck coatings, garage floor coatings, and one of the things they've really gotten great at is waterproofing garages. So if you have a garage that you need to make sure is waterproof so that it doesn't leak into other parts of the house. Concrete overlays, driveway resurfacing, salt. Salt is just the death to those surfaces, and we're coming out of it, though I guess today you might need to throw the salt down. Go to radconcretecoatings.com, or here's the little trick, radutah.com works too. There's a contact form there for a bid. Mike will see that, fill out that what the bid is, and they will come to you. Rad Concrete Coatings. All right, let's talk big picture about this matchup. Pretend game one hasn't happened. Obviously, the Rockets are great. They won 65 games. They are second in the league offensively, sixth in the league defensively. They're not the fast pace of play team everybody thinks they are. They're 14th in the league in pace of play. From the game one, let me give you one or two notes of goodness. One note of goodness is the Rockets' shot distribution. If you're going to beat the Rockets, you've got to stop them from taking 50% of the threes. The Jazz did that. Interestingly, in game one on the shot selection, the Jazz had better shot selection and better shot distribution than the Rockets. Now, James Harden has taken step back contested threes off the bounce and making them 5 out of 8 the other night. Forget about it. He goes 5 out of 8. It's over. This is not a good matchup for us for a few reasons. Okay. One, is they're the number one isolation team in the history of the NBA. So they will run isolation. They will run it willingly. They will run it often. And they will run it brilliantly. They ran 22 isolations per 100 possessions last year. The next most is Cleveland at 19. The league average is 14. They average 1.12 points per isolation. The next closest was the Clippers at 0.99, not even close, and league average is 0.9. We're 25th. Like, we don't run isolation. We will run. I think we will run like the fewest isolations in the league. Philadelphia runs the fewest. We run the 21st most. Problem with isolation is that's not what's great about our defense, right? The other thing the Rockets do is they force you into isolation. Teams run the most isolations against them by a large margin. So in theory, this is really interesting, I think. If the league averages 15 isolations a game, then defensively that should be the case too, right? Because you're playing the 29 teams, really no matter what you do, can you force teams into isolation? Well, evidently you can't. The brilliance of the Rockets' defense is that they are forcing people into isolation. Teams are playing 20 isolation possessions a game against them. The next closest is 16.7. The standard deviation here of where isolation is that there's not a huge variation, except for the Rockets. So you get forced into running isolation against the Rockets, which we're, as I just said, we're not great at. Here's the other thing that's interesting, and they're pretty good at it. They're seventh best. We have one of the best defenses in the league. We're only average against isolation because now Rudy's not coming over to help or play the system or do anything of that sort. So that their whole offensive style, which is to get into isolation, play one-on-one, negates our defensive brilliance. They're awesome at it. That's a tough, bad matchup for us. The other thing that, and really, you know, that's what makes us great is our defensive system. Is then also what makes us great offensively and makes us at least unique offensively. We're not great offensively. We're average. Is that we run more picks and more handoffs than anyone in the NBA by a large margin. We run about 125 picks or handoffs a game. League average is, you know, in the 80. We run about 30% more. But they switch every single one, which takes away exactly what our advantage is. So the matchup is as bad as it gets, plus the fact that they have just these two players in Chris Paul and James Harden that are incredible. But it's a really, really brutal matchup for us. Because the two things we do best, team defense taking away the paint, they're shooting 50% of their shots as threes, though we did a nice job of negating that in game one. So they're not going into the paint as much. And they're playing isolation, which is not what we want to defend. We defend everything else top 10 in the league. And then flip side, on the defensive end, because they switch, and I think they switched something defensively around, I don't know exactly what the number was, but the I believe they switched something like 60% of all plays. You know, just incredible, incredible number of switches that they took this year. And when they're switching that often, it becomes incredibly difficult for us to be who we want to be. And they do it great. I don't know if I can find... Yeah, I don't. Somebody had that number. I don't know how to find the number of switches, but it's an interesting it's an interesting number to look at, and they're great at it. I mean, they are just, that's what makes them defensively so darn good. The team in the NBA that are best defending pick and rolls, like we're the number one or two, I think we're number three team in the league defending pick and rolls. But if they can go isolation all the time, we don't get to deal with that. So it's a difficult, difficult scenario for us. And we'll have to try to break through, but they're truly, truly great at it. Here's the number, by the way, I've pulled up. I haven't figured the Rockets switch 31 picks a game. The Warriors switch 24. Oklahoma City switches 18, third most in the league. The average is 10. And the Rockets are switching 31 a game. Oh, my gosh. That's just on-ball picks. The Rockets defensively are seeing... Let me see if I can find this. I'm doing this on the fly here. The Rockets are seeing 70 on-ball picks a game, and they're switching 31 of them. The average amount of picks in a game is 71, and the average team switches 10 of them. So they're switching 40-45% of all switches, and the league is switching 15%. It's hard, really hard. And they switch, as I talked about earlier, in a creative fashion. All right, that's it from Houston. Fun day here. The Yankees are in our hotel. The Yankees and Astros are playing at Minute Maid Park. I don't know that I'm going to make it to the game, but that is obviously a pretty darn good matchup. Pink was floating around our hotel this week. So it's been some other rock concert is here now as well. I don't know who's playing. Somebody must be playing at the Toyota Center the next day or two. So it's all very exciting and very star-studded and 80 degrees. That is today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. What an incredible weekend. Let's get ready. And I'll rewatch the game tonight, try to see what I can pick up. Head over to practice, and that'll be tomorrow's show. And then Tuesday we'll do more of the same. Get you ready for Wednesday. All right, it is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.